Okay, Dr. Stelly's gonna give a talk on enhancing upland cotton breeding by improving the introgression, dissection, and manipulation of germplasm. Diploid species.
Thank you, Tom. It's my pleasure to give this talk. It really is represents a part of the work that was completed by a student that just finished her master's with me, Ms. Amani Naidu Kayana. And it was originally intended, of course, that she would give the talk, and actually I would have liked her to go in the graduate student competition, but as you can see, her parents are depicted in the photo at the left, and she decided that recently that she was going to go on for her PhD, and she thought it prudent on her part to take a little break and go to India between her degrees. So that gave me the chance to give her a presentation. I'd like to acknowledge the contributions of not only Amani, but a number of other people from in my lab as well as outside of my lab, including Dr. Amanda Holzkamp, who finished her PhD about a year and a half ago, Dr. Silvano Echea, and Travis Huggins, who were in the wheat program, Mr. Luis Santiago, who gave a talk earlier, Mitchell Schumann, who's with Dr. Wayne Smith, a former technician with me, Wayne Roschka, and Dr. Vaughn, who just gave a talk, postdoc in our lab, as well as a couple of other postdocs that have worked with us, Dr. Fei Wong and Dr. Nithya Subramanian, and lastly, Dr. Don Jones from Cotton Incorporated. So it's a well-known principle in breeding that the rate of genetic gain can be influenced by the amount of genetic diversity that is present, and also that the efficacy with which we use that germplasm can greatly enhance the rate of genetic gain. So there are many strategies for addressing these, but a couple of them that I want to mention is that to expand genetic diversity, one solution is to add genetic diversity through germplasm introgression, and of course that's something that my lab delves in extensively. There's also the possibility of greatly increasing germplasm usage efficacy by enhancing the detection and manipulation of genes that affect traits of interest, which is also an area that we're very interested in. In terms of the genetic diversity, another well-known principle is that the germplasm pool can be categorized, if you will, into primary, secondary, and tertiary gene pools. This idea denotes, on one hand, it's relatively easy to use germplasm that's in the primary gene pool, but as you get further away, although it's more difficult, there's a greater amount of diversity to be had. And so in the case of cotton, what we find is that the primary gene pool includes the 4X species, including Pima and upland cotton, as well as several other tetraploid species. And then we have the secondary and tertiary gene pools, which include diploid species. While those share a common chromosome number, they do differ in terms of their genomic groups that are involved with these. And on that basis, there are major differences in how easy they are to actually deploy for germplasm usage. The number of species associated with these is depicted on the right. In the case of our program, most of my work over the first 30 years has been dedicated to working with the primary gene pool, with a lesser amount being devoted to the secondary gene pool, but we're moving more towards looking at the secondary gene pool, which is relevant to the talk today. And in particular, Amani worked with Gossypium arboreum and Gossypium thurberi, which represent species in the A and D genome groups. And in particular, what we were interested in is using a synthetic tetraploid that was developed a number of years ago, a hybrid between Gossypium arboreum and Gossypium thurberi was created, and that was chromosome doubled to establish an A2D1 synthetic tetraploid, which is self-fertile, and you can reproduce it through seed, and you can also use it as a parent in crosses with hirsutum. So this brings to bear the possibility of using these donors for all sorts of traits, and some of the ones that are thought about in the context of these include drought, root rot, bollworm aphid resistances on one hand, and then on the other, fiber quality, prolific efficacy, frost resistance, and fusarium wilt resistance. But in each case, the opportunity is probably greatly exceed that because they're both going to bring in potentially up to 30,000 or so new genes. So what we have in mind, of course, is to introgress this material and create a platform that allows us to do both genetics and breeding. And the idea is using a wide cross, we would create a mapping population, and I'll get to this in a minute, develop a cluster file, develop a linkage map, develop some simplex assays, and ultimately use marker-assisted selection to create chromosome segment substitution lines, which also can be increased through seed, distributed for replicated testing, and so on, for all kinds of analyses. So in the case of Amani, she was charged with developing the mapping population, creating a new cluster file, creating a high-density linkage map, and demonstrating that we could use this information to establish simplex CASP assays that could be used for SNP genotyping and thus for anything downstream. Concomitant with these endeavors that she was charged with, she was also responsible for advancing the populations through a few generations of backcrossing. So a word about chromosome segment substitution lines, or CSSLs, as they're sometimes called. They have a number of different names by which they're alluded to, but they're depicted in this diagram, not for cotton, but the idea is the same. This is for rice. It's a very nice, simple set, and so I can talk about the principles very easily here. The idea is that across the top, the x-axis, you see 1 through 12. That represents the chromosomes, and in fact, these are markers along those chromosomes, so it's actually the linkage map running across all 12 chromosomes. And then from top to bottom, you have the different chromosome segment substitution lines. And each of those lines then, the idea is that each line will have one or a few segments representing a chunk or chunks out of the donor genome, but all are in a common genetic background. So this isogenic platform is very powerful, just like it is for chromosome substitution lines for doing any kinds of downstream analysis. So it provides both a genetic research platform and a breeding platform. Oh, the other principle I wanted to mention is shown at the bottom right in the cyan background. So one of the important goals is to have either all or nearly all of your donor genome in a library of chromosome segment substitution lines. So bringing basically the entire species genome into the fold, you might say, for breeding and research purposes. So without going into a great deal of detail, we've developed in collaboration with a lot of other people, but we led the development of the Cotton SNP 63K chip, which is a high-throughput genotyping platform based on Illumina Infinium II assays. This has on it assays for 63 different functional assays for 63,000 assayable SNPs. These were primarily targeting SNPs that involve hirsutum versus either other hirsutums or other tetraploid species. But about 20% of the SNPs put on this chip are actually for other species. And of those, a number of them are not for the AD species. There are some of the diploid species as well. So those are shown at the bottom there. In order to use a chip such as this, not just this chip, but any chip like this, you need to have what's called a cluster file. The cluster file is used by the software for automated genotype calling. And so it's important then for usage of the chip for any kind of operation where you're going to be looking at a lot of data. So it was really designed for what I call AD-AD genotyping. So hirsutum, or hirsutum barbadense, or hirsutum musseline, or hirsutum tomatosum, for example. It wasn't designed for diploid. But anyway, the idea behind this is shown here on the left. You see a microscope slide, which is really a chip that has 24 different assays on it. So each one of those 24 assays has the 63,000 SNP assays. You collect your data. It's basically an image file. The computer uses a genotyping module to position the signal, and then the software has to interpret that. And the cluster file is what interprets the positions of those and calls the genotypes. So the cluster file is very important for this automated genotyping. So the objectives for Imani were to develop a customized cluster file that would be applicable to her material and presumably other similar kinds of diploid species introgression products. As well as, once she had that done, we wanted her to develop a high-density linkage map. And once we had that, that meant we had a nice resource from which we could potentially develop simplex markers. So we wanted to make sure that that was the case. And so we wanted her to test the idea that we could develop CASP assays for individual markers that would be of high quality. So this illustrates that when you run these kinds of analyses, if your cluster file isn't very good, or sometimes you just have bad data, but you can get results, and the black ones here are misclassified or no-call types of data, so you need to rectify this sort of thing. And we saw a fair number of these when we took the original cluster file and ran it on her mapping population. So what you want to do is have something like shown in the middle here, where it shows after the development of the new cluster file, you're able to classify each of these clusters of signals into the correct genotypes, and you can enhance both your call frequency and your call accuracy. So you come out ahead in two ways. And on the left here is shown the call frequency. And what I want to direct your attention to in particular is the right column above 1.0. So those are the loci for which the calls are spot on. You're not missing any data. Okay. Of those, you can see that the blue bar is higher than the green bar. In other words, you get better results using the new cluster file versus the old cluster file. Likewise, if we look at the call accuracy, we get a significant bump up there as well. And so we went from 13,000, almost 13,500 to over 16,000 accurately called genotypes, which is an increase of 20%. That's quite a bit. So once we have the genotypes, then we can start talking about doing mapping. And for that, we use the JoinMap 4.1, using the independence approach with log scores of 10 to 22. For the algorithm, we use regression mapping with default parameter settings, and for the mapping function, the Cosambi function. Once we had all that data, we used MapChart for producing the actual graphic displays of various sorts, one of which is shown at the right. We also, once we got to that point, we used TechMatrix in order to kind of look at the order of loci. This is a nice one. Some of them are a little bit messier, and some of them we had to play around with to get straightened out. But in the end, they look generally pretty good. So anyway, here is an example of a set of seven of the 26 linkage groups that we created. If you put all 26 up there, they tend to get too small if you can't see anything. So I just put seven up here to illustrate. And moreover, these are shown at a density of no more than one marker for every three centimorgans, again, because the density gets too high. But the bottom line is that the maps are pretty dense. And they're pretty good. There's over 500 markers per chromosome on average, and most of these linkage groups are from about 100 to 150 or a little bit larger centimorgans. So it looks like the mapping worked pretty well. Again, using these to just illustrate and compare, we were curious about how good are these relative to other things. So we compared the A2D1 map to the interspecific map that was created from Barbadensi and Hirsutum, which is shown in the middle, comparing both the total number of loci mapped, these are using the same chip, as well as the map lengths for these specific chromosomes. And you can see also in the blue, we've indicated the numbers of shared loci. And these are quite important because you want to be able to relate the two maps to each other. And so that you can see we had a lot of points that were in common between the two. And then lastly, as shown on the right, we're interested in what's the relative lengths of these two maps. The lengths basically tell you how much recombination is occurring. So the more recombination is occurring, the longer the map. So you can see that we have relatively shorter linkage groups with the A2D1, but not too bad. They're, you know, running about 80% or so the length of the Barbadensi Hirsutum map, which is about 10% longer than the Hirsutum map, which is kind of interesting. So this would be about 90% of the hirsutum map in terms of length. So the last thing that we really wanted to know is, well, can we use this information now to cherry pick markers out from areas that we're interested in? Just for example, for the salt salinity or for the fiber quality, you know, if we know where the thing is at, we can pull out markers that we can use for individual selection of seed. And so we grabbed about 50 random SNPs out of the whole data set of the ones that had been mapped and ran those, and we found it about 40%, between 40 and 50% of them gave really, really high quality markers that are easy to score and would be perfect for many types of applications. So the bottom line was, yes, we can use that. So to summarize, Amani she spent a lot of time at the computer. You always hear about these projects where students had to go out in the field and slug through things. Well, she had to sit at a computer and slug through thousands of these SNP graphs to identify the ones that need to be tweaked, and she tweaked the ones that did. So she created the new cluster file that's really good, not only for A2 and D1, but I think is going to be good for Longicalix and Morienum and other genomes of the diploid up from the secondary gene pool. Using that, she created a high-density, the first, really, high-density linkage map for this kind of germplasm. And lastly, she demonstrated that we can use these new resources for all kinds of breeding purposes. And really, all of these three things have multiple applications in genomics, germplasm, genetics, and breeding. Just as an example, the linkage map could be used to enhance the A2 genome assembly for Gossypium arboreum. So with that, let me acknowledge a couple of people that served on Amani's committee, including Dr. Jane Deaver, and David Beeren. David Beeren's a rose and peach breeder at Texas A&M. Everybody knows who Jane is. I don't need to say anything about her. For the mapping, a few people pitched in with the getting Amani going with the JoinMap software, the cluster file work with several people, Kelly Koken, who's a technician with the TIGS lab, Dr. Penny Riggs, one of my colleagues in animal sciences, Claire Gill in animal sciences, and Ian Wilson from CSIRO, who had some roles in that. And then lastly, with R. Mitchell Schumann, who's a doctoral student under Wayne Smith. And of course, our sponsors, AgriLife Research, Cotton Incorporated, and Illumina. Thank you.